Tower of Terror by Terry Deary, illustrated by Martin Brown. Gory Stories, read by Vanna Vance. Introduction. Take a bucket, any bucket, the sort of leather bucket you might keep in your bedroom for when you want to pee in the night. That'll do. Got it? Take it to your butcher, but remember, empty the pee out before you go to the butcher. Now ask your butcher to fill the bucket with blood. Bull's blood is good, but pig's blood will do. Look at that bucket of blood, because that is how much blood will be spilt in this terrible tale of the Tudors. Be warned. If you can't bear to look at a bucket of blood, then don't read my tale. Of course, I was not around in those days. Yes, I know some people say I'm so old I write history from memory. That's cruel and untrue, and if I find out who is saying it, I will walk right up to them and stick out my tongue. Old Queen Elizabeth had her diamond-crusted skirts on the throne at the end of the terrible Tudor age, and London was the most cruel city in the world. You may get some shocking surprises. Take the plague, for example. Well, you can take it and catch it, for all I care. Just don't give it to me. When I went to school, I was told there were two great plagues in Britain. One, the Black Death, swept the country like death with a scythe in the Middle Ages, 1349, if you want to stick a date on it. Then there was another, the Great Plague, around 1665, that was driven out by the fierce Great Fire of London in 1666. But my teachers told me a foul fib, because there were dozens of plagues in the years between. In Tudor times, the plague pits filled up time and time again. Some terrified Tudors were sure it was God's punishment for their wicked ways. Theaters were closed down in plague time to stop it spreading. Poor actors and writers like Master William Shakespeare suffered because they had to shut down their shows. Mind you, they didn't suffer as much as the people who caught the plague. You wouldn't want to know how they suffered. You would? Oh, then you'd better read the story, hadn't you? This is the story of a Tudor terror called Simon Tuttle and his putrid paw. When you find out what cunning criminals they were, you'll be glad they never existed outside the pages of this story. Yes, brave writers like me have to risk their lives to bring you such a terrible tale. The twisted twosome call themselves entertainers. What sort of entertainers, you ask? All sorts. Juggler and acrobat, dancer and tightrope walker when Simon was a boy, actor and playwright, singer and clown when he grew older, and, in his old age, the owner of Tuttle's famous flea circus. You may have seen their posters, Tuttle's Fantastic Fleas, the show that is really up to scratch. But that was in September 1666. Back then, when Simon's story started, it was February 1603. And it all started with a trip to the butcher for what? For that bucket of blood. Blood, buckets, and boards. Simon, Master Thomas Tuttle shouted, go and get me a bucket of blood. Yes, Pa, the scrawny boy said wearily. They were staying at the Lewes Inn in Southwark. It was a rat-infested, damp, and stinking hole. The landlord put bowls of goat's blood on the bedroom floor to attract the fleas and keep them off the sleeping guests. Every morning, he drowned 100 fleas, but every night their friends came back to bite his guests. Still, the inn was cheap and close to the south end of London Bridge and the Bear Gardens where the Tuttles had just done their show. Simon rose from the straw, brushed the fleas off his tunic, and stepped over the snoring drunks he and his pa shared the room with. He took the bearskin cloak that he used for a blanket and threw it over his shoulders. It was cold in the tavern. It would be colder outside. The boy tumbled down the dark stairway and into Tooley Street. He collected a slops bucket from behind the door and turned east towards Gully Hole and the butcher shop. He pushed through a flock of bleeding sheep that were on their way to the butcher and licked his lips. I'll be having a bit of you for my supper tonight, he jeered at a black-faced lamb, but the lamb didn't believe him. All he replied was, bah. An icy wind stung his face, but at least the cold would kill the plague. Well, that's what Pa used to say. In the summer, when the stink was higher than the Tower of London, the bad air could kill you inside a day. First you feel dizzy and your head aches, Dr. Lamp used to tell them in the tavern. Then you get a cough, and when you start coughing blood, there's no hope for you. You'll be feeding the worms in the churchyard before the day is out. He would wave a warning finger under their noses, and if you see anyone coughing blood, just take to your heels and run. Can you really catch the plague from blood? Simon asked him. The doctor fixed the boy with his watery eyes. I've seen it many a time. When I was your age, young Simon, I caught the plague and I got over it. I was one of the lucky ones. Once you get over it, you never catch it again. That's how I came to be a doctor and brought comfort to the plague victims. That's why there's no one better, he boasted. Why did Simon believe him? If Dr. Lamp was that good, he should have been the richest man in London, but he was as ragged and skinny as a parson's cat and smelled even worse. His white beard was thinner than the east wind and his bones poked through his clothes. Simon believed Dr. Lamp when he said blood spread the plague. He believed his pa when he said rotten summer air spread the plague. He believed everyone and woke each morning thinking it would be his last. Every time Simon coughed, he coughed into his hand and looked for spots of blood. He didn't expect to reach the age of 20. His ma hadn't. Anyway, I was telling you that Simon set off for the butcher's shop in the freezing morning air. The cobbles were slippery with ice and frozen sheep droppings, and he slithered along to Master Ketch the butcher. Simon was more scared of Master Ketch than he was of the plague. The butcher's forehead was so low his eyebrows disappeared into his black hair. His skin was as yellow as ox fat, and his hands as big as legs of pork. He spoke in a sort of growl and spat through the gaps in his teeth onto the bloody sheep fleece on his floor. He just killed a bullock and had spilled the steaming guts onto the floor. Simon decided he'd never eat beef again. It puts you off, seeing that sort of thing. "Can I have a bucket of blood, please, Master Ketch?" the boy asked. "Help yourself. Barrel in the corner," the man grunted. "2 pence." "2 pence," Simon squeaked. Master Ketch always made the boy's voice rise in fear. "It was only a penny yesterday." The man waved the vicious butcher knife under the scrawny boy's thin and pointed nose. "Ah, but now I know what it's for, and it's not for catching fleas. Now I know how your father uses it to trick money out of people. It's my blood. I deserve a share." When he said, "It's my blood," he didn't mean it was blood from his body. He meant it was the blood of the animals he'd slaughtered, and he owned it. I just wanted to make that clear. Simon groaned. "I only have 2 pence, and I need a farthing to buy a pig's belly." Ketch narrowed his eyes and looked to see if he was telling the truth. "Right. Tell you what. 2 pence for the blood, and I'll give you a pig's belly free." The boy sighed and agreed. He dipped the bucket into the cold blood and filled it. He took the pig's belly from Master Ketch's hairy, blood-soaked hands, paid him, and hurried from the shop. Ketch spat as the boy trotted away. The streets were starting to fill with traders ready to open their shops, and the housewives were opening their shutters to let out the smells of the night. Pa was still snoring when Simon got back. He shook him. "Pa," he said, "time to get ready." Thomas Tuttle rubbed his red eyes and squinted at his son. "Go and get me a bucket of blood." "I've got it," the boy said. "And a pig's bladder? I've got that, too." Master Tuttle lay back and shivered under his blanket. "You know what to do," he murmured and turned over. "It's an awful job, Pa. Can't you do it?" He glared up at the boy. "I suppose so," he grunted and climbed off his mattress, stiff as an axe. He shook his head and staggered over to the bowl in the corner of the room to splash water on his face. He cursed. "Ice. A block of ice." "It's cold," Simon nodded. "Then I'll need some brandy to warm me before the show," his father said. "Not too much, Pa, or you won't be able to perform." Master Tuttle just snorted and walked down the stairs. In the kitchen of the tavern below, there was a little warmth from the fire of the night before. Pa took the pig bladder and tied up one end tight. He pushed a funnel into the other end, and Simon held it while he poured the blood into the bladder. When they had a bowl full of blood, they tied the other end. You can guess what they were going to do with that, can't you? What? You can't? Have you never seen the street shows? It's an old trick, but some men still performed it as fairs, hundreds of years after old Queen Elizabeth died. I will tell you how it worked. A trickster like Tuttle grabbed a crowd around a platform in St. Paul's Churchyard. He showed them card tricks and juggling. He made them laugh with little magic tricks like pulling a penny from a lady's ear or making her hat disappear. Then came the most daring stunt. "Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce my most dangerous trick," he'd cry. Then he'd pull a dagger from his belt. "I will insert this knife into my very bowels. Ooh," the crowd would gasp, "and let out my very life's blood. Ooh, I will lie down in this coffin. My grieving son," he would go on, pointing to Simon, "will close the lid. Ooh, ooh." It was a black wooden box with a secret door in the bottom. "When I am dead as death himself, my son will say the magical spell and bring me back to life. Not only that, but my wound will be healed." The trickster would then stab himself in the pig bladder full of blood that was hidden under his shirt. Blood would gush out, and he would fall into the coffin. When Simon closed the lid, the trickster would take off the shirt and take the clean one from under the hidden door. He'd change into the clean one, then hide the blood-stained shirt and bladder behind the door. A tap on the lid would tell Simon he was ready. Simon would open the coffin, and Pa would step out. "Ooh," lots of times. "There is one very important thing I need to add." Under the bladder full of blood, the trickster always strapped a piece of wooden board against his skin over his stomach. That way, he could stab hard into the bladder and not risk harming himself. It looked so real, people would gasp. So now you can see why Simon needed the bladder and the blood. Every night they'd wash the shirts and do the trick again the next day. After a week, they'd move on to a new town because the watchman might start to suspect their real game. The one that made them lots of money, enough money to buy Simon a bearskin cloak and Pa plenty of ale in the taverns of England. The Tuttle trickster announced, "Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed the show. Please show us your thanks by placing some coins in the cap of my dear son, who will now pass among you." Pa would then take his whistle made of reed and dance a jig while he played a merry tune. People dropped coins into Simon's hat. Even in a big crowd, it was never a lie. Ah, but the people had to take out their purses to pay the boy. So as he collected the money, Simon watched to see where they kept their purses. They hung on ribbons, so were easy to cut. Pa then went into his fire-eating act. He blew great gusts of flame into the air, and everyone looked up. So no one saw Simon as he nipped their bungs. Sorry, that was what they used to say for cut their purses. By the time the show was over, Simon would have a few fat purses under his cloak, and he'd hide them under the secret door in the coffin. Most people took a while to find their purses were missing. If someone found out before the end of the show, then Pa and Simon would stand on the stage and cry out, "Beware, beware, there are cup purses in the crowd." There would be such a panic and a rush for home, no one noticed them pick up the coffin and slip back to the tavern. It was a good life, and one that made them a merry penny. But in the week I'm telling you about, it all went wrong. It was the week they were in London, a rich city full of fools. But the biggest fool that morning was Pa. Plague, poverty, and purses. While Simon was collecting a bucket of blood early that dreadful day, a girl called Moll was shivering in the tiny room of her lodging. Her mother lay on the floor of their room in Old Fish Street. "You're so cold," Moll whispered. "You were so hot with fever last night. How can you be so cold now?" Her mother's eyes were staring at the ceiling. Her hands gripped the thin blanket like iron claws. She didn't reply. She couldn't. She was dead. A faint smear of blood dried on her chin where she had coughed her last. Moll knew she was dead, but couldn't leave her side. The room was bare except for a bundle of cloth that Mrs. Armour had started sewing into a dress. There was a shoulder bag with her sewing materials and a bowl of water Moll had been feeding her through the night. There was no food. Moll hadn't eaten for 2 days. Once her mother was too ill to sew, they had no money for food. They said the plague would be cured if you drank from the skull of a dead man. Moll could not even afford to buy a skull to save her ma. Moll leaned forward and kissed her mother's blue lips. She tasted the blood. "They say the plague is spread by blood. Maybe it will take me now." But Moll knew she'd had the fever the summer before. The lucky ones who recovered never caught the plague again. She rose to her feet and looked down. "Sorry, Ma, I can't afford a funeral. I'll have to leave you here. The landlord will find you. The parish will bury you. God will look after you, and I'll join you soon." The girl walked to the door and lifted the latch. Then she saw her mother's sewing bag and went back to pick it up. She didn't know why. A sewing bag was no use to a dead girl, and soon she would be as dead as her Ma. Ma left the crumbling wood house and stepped onto the icy cobbles of Old Fish Street. She was in a trance as she walked down Lambert Hill towards the River Thames. She didn't feel the cold through her thin shoes or the wind cutting through her shawl. She didn't see the people hurrying about their business. She only saw the glitter of the river ahead of her. There was the coal ship from Newcastle tied up at a jetty. She walked past it to the end of the wooden planks. It wasn't far to fall into the river. She closed her eyes and pictured her mother waiting with open arms. The water would swallow her and choke her, but the pain would be brief. The chill water would put an end to it. The girl stepped off the end of the jetty and waited for the water to wash away all her troubles. Her heels hit the thick ice and she skidded over the surface like a duck landing on a frozen lake. She spun around at a dizzy speed and came to a halt when she slapped into the side of a barge that was gripped by the band of ice. A bargeman looked down from the side of the boat with a grin. "You're supposed to wear bones strapped to your feet if you want to skate on the river," he laughed. Moll blushed. She hated anyone to notice her. She hated anyone to laugh at her. She scrambled to her feet and slithered back to the jetty. The girl hauled herself up and ran back to the city. She skidded up the cobbles of Lambert Hill, straight across Old Fish Street, where she was almost trampled by a carter's horse. She felt the warm breath of the horse as it snorted, and she brushed against its massive chest before tumbling to the ground. The cart should have crushed her, but it slithered towards the gutter, and the rim of the wheel brushed her leg. The carter swore at her. Moll scrambled to her feet. She ran to the road they called Old Change and spun left into St. Paul's Chid. She shook her head. Twice in as many minutes I've been saved from death. Don't you want me to die and join you, Ma? Are you looking after me? Terror gripped her, and she looked up at the gray sky, searching out her mother's spirit. It was there, she knew, protecting her. She tried to call out again, but her tongue suddenly seemed swollen and her throat tight. Only a soft squawk came out. She stopped panting, but was unable to make a sound. She suddenly realized where she was going. The mighty cathedral cast a shadow over her. At least it would be sheltered in there. She could pray and think. Maybe even beg in the churchyard for food. Moll slipped through the massive doors and into the gloom. "It's cold out there," Pa whined and shivered as he and Simon carried the coffin to St. Paul's Churchyard with the help of Dr. Lamp. "Think of the money you'll make," the old doctor chuckled. "The crowds in the Bear Gardens yesterday were a mean lot. There'll be real rich gentlemen with real fat purses in St. Paul's Churchyard. Think of the purses Simon can cut. That'll warm your heart." "It's not me heart that's cold," Pa sniffed. "It's me nose, me toes, and me fingers," he moaned as he took one hand off the coffin to blow on it. They reached the great stone gate at the south end of London Bridge. Above them, over the archway, there were spikes stuck in the stonework, and on the end of each spike was a head. The doctor chuckled. "It's even colder up there. Just imagine if you get caught and your head gets stuck on a pole over London Bridge, eh? Crows pecking out your eyes and ripping out your hair to make their nests, till your skull is bald as an egg. Lovely view of the city, but a bit chilly in this weather. Heh heh. I spy with my little... Oh, poo, where's my eye?" Pa glared over his shoulder. "Shut up, doctor. Just shut up. If we get caught, we hang at Smithfield. It's only lords and traitors that have the pleasure of the axe." "Pleasure, Pa?" Simon cried, looking up at the empty skulls. "How is your head being lopped off ever a pleasure?" because it's better than hanging. The axe is quick and over in a trice, but the rope can strangle you slowly. Hey, hey, Dr. Lamp cackled. When they hang a boy like you, it is slowest of all. You are so skinny you haven't the weight to hang yourself. If the hangman's kind, he may pull on your legs to make it quicker. Hey, that's why the axe is a pleasure. He warmed up as they walked over the river, crowded with houses and shops that hung on the side of the bridge like snails on a garden wall. People stepped aside, and even carts halted to let them pass when they saw the coffin. Many took off their hats to show respect and muttered blessings. They crossed themselves for the poor, dead victim inside. Yes, you know there was just a hidden shirt, a reed whistle, juggling balls, fire-eating stuff, and a bladder of pig's blood in there. But the people in the London streets didn't know that. Still, it was nice for the dead pig to have his bladder blessed. Pa and Dr. Lamp argued about executions. What about the Countess of Pole, then, Dr. Lamp? The old queen's father, Henry VIII, had her topped. The old woman didn't want to go, so she dodged around the block. The executioner was a young lad, and he kept slicing and missing. Why, they reckon it took 20 blows to get the old lady's head on the floor. What a mess. I'd still go for the axe, the stubborn old doctor snorted and took a hand off the coffin to run a finger under his collar. Pa turned to his son. What do you say, Simon? How would you rather be executed, axe or rope? Neither, he cried. I don't want to be executed at all, if that's all right with you. Pa shrugged. Better be careful when you're cutting purses, then, hadn't you? It was a long walk to St. Paul's from South Wark, and Pa soon warmed up as they tramped the length of Thames Street up to Old Fish Street and on to St. Paul's Chide. A bell chimed 10 o'clock, and it was still quiet in the churchyard. A few booksellers were setting up their stalls, but there weren't many customers around yet. They laid the coffin on the ground, and Pa announced, I'll get cold if I stand around here waiting. Tell you what, Simon, the doctor and I will pop into that tavern on Addle Hill to keep warm. That's a good idea. I could eat a minced pie if they have one, Simon said cheerfully. Ah, no, Pa said, rubbing his hands. You stay here to guard the coffin, son. What? He sucked air through his cracked teeth. Oh, yes, there are a lot of thieves around, you know. Anyway, Dr. Lamp and I have a little business to discuss, so you stay here. What sort of business? Secret sort of business. We'll be back when the clock chimes 11 and the churchyard is full of customers. The boy groaned and sat on the coffin to wait. It wasn't the cold that was so bad. It was Pa. Simon knew he'd come out of the tavern full of brandy. He'd drop more than he juggled, get tangled in the shirt in the coffin, fill the whistle with spit so it wouldn't play. As for the fire-eating, he would probably suck instead of blow and boil his belly full of brandy. Simon knew he'd have to change the plan. He needed to start cutting purses while the audience was watching. Thomas Tuttle stabbed himself in the belly. That way they'd have a few purses under the boy's doublet, and a failed fire act wouldn't matter. By 11 o'clock, an hour later, Pa and Dr. Lamp had drunk the tavern dry. Knives, nips, and needles. We left them all in St. Paul's Cathedral, you remember, dear reader? Those of you who go to your local church would be amazed at the cathedral. I don't just mean the size. I mean the fact that it was a meeting place where men went to do business deals, gamble with dice or cards, and see friends. Some dealers used it as a shortcut and drove flocks of sheep in through the west door and out of the east door. Beggars whined and pleaded. Some pretended to be mad and danced around the stone floors until the police constables came to clear them from the holy place. Beggars with one leg suddenly found the other one tucked up at the knee and ran for safety. A miracle. Old Queen Elizabeth passed a law that said only gentlemen could carry swords, and there were a lot of swords in the cathedral. That meant a lot of wealthy men and their womenfolk. The Tuttles only robbed from the rich. Aha, you cry, they're like Robin Hood, who robbed from the rich to give to the poor. No, the Tuttles robbed from the rich because the poor had nothing worth pinching. But I'm supposed to be telling you about Moll. Compared to her, everyone was rich, so she would rob from anyone. But that day, she hadn't set out to steal anything. She set out to die, and failed. Moll tried to find a quiet corner to pray for her mother, but as time rolled on, the place became noisier and rowdy, laughter echoed up to the high roof. And Moll was hungry. Perhaps if she went into the churchyard, she could beg a penny and buy a loaf of bread. As a clock chimed 11, she stepped through the doors into the frosted churchyard. A large man with a red face and a matted brown beard rolled in from the street. His arm was around the neck of an old man in a black robe. The old man had a wispy white beard and seemed almost as drunk as his friend. They walked over to a boy who was sitting on a coffin. He was a weedy boy with a weasel face and nervous eyes that slithered about like a lizard. Pa, you're drunk, the boy whined. You'll never be able to juggle in that state. Simon, my boy, the red-faced man roared. I'm the greatest juggler in England. I can juggle blindfolded. I can juggle when I'm asleep. A little warm brandy will not harm me in the slightest. The man lifted the lid of the coffin. Moll looked on in horror. She didn't want to see a second corpse that day, but inside there were just things they needed for the act. Let me help, Pa, the boy said. No, 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 you go and gather me a crowd, Simon. Dr. Lamp will help me to dress, the man said, waving the boy away. Pa and Dr. Lamp slid away into a shaded corner of the graveyard. Pa opened his shirt, and the doctor helped tie a pig's bladder around Pa's guts, then hid it under the folds of the shirt. Simon started screeching, roll up and see the world's greatest juggler perform the most amazing tricks, then watch as he carves himself open like a prisoner in the tower, and see if he lives. If he doesn't, we already have the coffin ready to bury him, and if he does survive, he will eat fire. Yes, I said fire, and the crowd did start to gather. Moll stood on the step that led up to the door so she could see the show, but also see the whole scene played out in front of her. Pa began to juggle, but his legs swayed like willow twigs, and he dropped more than he caught. The crowd roared with laughter. It was more fun than watching a good juggler. Then Moll saw Simon slip around to the back of the crowd. He slid a small knife from his sleeve, darted into the crowd, and in one movement cut a green silk purse from a woman's fur-trimmed dress and stuffed it in the back of his belt. A bung nipper, Moll thought. She knew it was a better way to riches than begging, but if you were caught, you'd hang. An hour before, she had wanted to die. Now she knew she didn't want to die, squirming on the end of a rope, while hundreds of people gaped and leered. But perhaps there was a way to steal a purse without the owner turning her over to the law. She hopped down the steps and followed Simon. Pa had stopped trying to juggle, and now he was roaring, "Ladies and gentlemen, hail out to me, introduce my most dangerous trick." He pulled a dagger from his belt. "I will insert this knife into my very bowels." Suddenly, the crowd stopped laughing. Simon appeared next to his father at the front of the crowd, ready to help. In the silence of the churchyard, only the cries of the crows could be heard. Pa swept the knife down towards his belly. It plunged into his stomach and blood gushed out, almost splattering the people in the front row. Pa had a look of surprise on his face, more than pain. He threw an arm around the shoulders of the boy and staggered towards the coffin. Simon sat him on the grass and lifted the coffin lid. Suddenly, Simon plunged an arm into the coffin and pulled out a wooden board. He gave a cry that split the air and sent the crying crows into a frenzy. "The board, you drunken old fool! Pa, you forgot the board!" Pa nodded his head slowly, then rolled into the open coffin. Simon called to Dr. Lamp, "We need to get him back to the tavern as soon as possible." Simon may have looked as thin as a weed, but he found extra strength to lift one end of the coffin. Dr. Lamp lifted the other end, and the two jogged out of the graveyard, leaving a bewildered crowd wondering just what was going on. The lady with the fur-trimmed dress turned to the man next to her. "Oh, I know it's a trick, but that looked so real it was amazing. Why didn't they stay to collect money?" "Don't know," the man shrugged. "I have money with me," the woman began and reached for her belt. She looked down at the slashed ribbon. "Bung nippers," she subbed. "Bung nippers." Everyone in the crowd reached for their own purses and hurried away to safety. Moll looked down St. Paul's Chide and saw the coffin disappear into Charter Lane. The weak winter sun cast weak winter shadows. Moll slipped into one of the deeper shadows and followed them. The end.